Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. We'll continue our discussion about the Mark Hoffman bombings. After a night's rest, the bombs continued the next day again. But this time, Mark himself was the victim. Was it an accident? Was it intended for someone else? Or did Mark purposely injure himself? These are some great questions, and Kurt Bench will talk about the answers to these questions in our conversation. In preparing for another interview, I was surprised to learn that a young missionary by the name of David Rosenvall actually witnessed and heard the bomb blast that injured Hoffman. The first voice you'll hear in our next conversation will be Kurt Bench, but David will describe his reactions to the loud noise he heard as he left the Salt Lake Temple that day. Check out our conversation.
So, remember I told you about the warning, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
And so the next day, which is the 16th of October, I'm driving. Actually, I had been somewhere to try to negotiate a deal that was based on information I had gotten from him. So I'm driving back to my office, and on the news said there was a third bomb. And keep in mind, this is surreal for our area. I mean, these bombings are going on. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows why. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of uncertainty. And then when there's a third bomb, and then I find out that it's Mark Hoffman that's the victim, I about drove off the road. And I remember hitting my steering wheel and saying aloud to myself, "Mark, why didn't you listen to me?" You know, he didn't seek safety, and he was the third victim.
The day before I was to enter into the MTC, I was at the Salt Lake Temple and coming out from that experience. And our car was parked on Main Street, just beside the Deseret Gym. And as I got to the car and was putting some things in there, just up the road and just behind the Deseret Gym there was an explosion. And at the time, I had no idea what it was, what was going on. As we quickly ran up there to see it, there were about 20 people gathered around somebody on the road. You could see that he was injured and hurt and didn't know who it was at the time. And continued on. The next day went to the MTC, and my grandmother, who just lived just down the road from there, kept sending me articles as things were developing and so forth. So I got to learn about him while I was serving on my mission in Sweden through those newspaper articles. And every time I hear the name Mark Hoffman, my heart and my mind goes right back to that incident, as if I was just there hearing that car explode. So,
wow.
Interesting way to start your mission, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding. That's quite a story there. So I was just reading the book Salamander, and it said that there was a witness, but I guess there were several witnesses to this.
Yeah, I think, I don't know who actually saw it. I would imagine there'd be a couple that were right there when it happened. Most of the people, I think, came out from the gym or around the corner and saw it kind of right after the explosion.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow, that's kind of crazy.
And then they started on the news, they were speculating that he might be a suspect, which was a whole new twist. And so at that point, and you know, there's lots of phone calls and a lot of us are talking to each other, speculating and what have you heard and comparing notes and so on. But then when they're looking at him as a suspect rather than just a victim, more than one of us, there were a few of us who decided that we better go tell the Salt Lake police what we knew, just because we don't know what's going on, but we do know some things that might be helpful. So Shannon Flynn, who was involved in a number of ways, he and I were down there at the same time, as was Wade Lillywhite, who has more in the story later. We were interviewed by the detectives, and I remember reviewing with them all these events. And I, at the time, I was keeping a journal, and I wrote all this down, and I I wrote a lot of things down that later made a lot of sense, but I couldn't believe at the time, well, if he were the guilty party, then he would have done this for this reason and so on. And I was sort of making connections without really believing them. And it was a little frightening later to reread everything I'd written and have all the things that I thought couldn't be true be true. And so anyway, I was sharing a lot of information with the detective, and he kept referring to him as the guy that did it, you know, the perpetrator, the, well, you know, we know he's the one. No, he couldn't be. But then I found myself saying, but if he were, then, you know, this makes sense. And turned out that was right, but I couldn't believe it at the time.
You were right, yeah.
I just couldn't believe it at the time. And so it was quite a while later that I and others could bring ourselves to believe that Mark was guilty of anything. And of course, there was nothing known about forgeries at the time. This was all bombings and, you know, possible connection to document dealing. And I think you asked me if we were scared or if there was fear. But I can't remember.
Yeah, were you fearful for your own
safety? So, yeah, I mean, I never felt like I was in imminent danger, although I knew it was a possibility. None of us knew. And there were lots of people that were kind of heading for the hills. So after I went to the police, then I mean, we all knew that there was a very real threat to further loss of life. And so I remember leaving the police station with Shannon Flynn. He says he had asked me if I wanted to go.
Shannon?
Shannon was another friend of Mark's, did a lot of business with him. He got charged with, he helped Mark make an Uzi submachine gun into fully automatic. Anyway, but he'd done a lot. He was a friend and business associate of Mark, so there were several of those. Anyway, that didn't stick. And but he was, you know, telling the police what he knew that was relevant and so on. And
so you said that didn't stick. What didn't stick?
Well, that
the charges,
yeah, the charge for they dropped that
because basically the charge was that he was helping him
make an illegal weapon, basically. And so anyway, we were leaving at the same time. I mean, they asked if I wanted to go see Mark's car, which was over by the Deseret Gym, you know, near the church office building that had been blown up. The car, not the Deseret Gym.
Which is now the conference center, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, yeah, I would. And so we went out to his car, and we kind of looked at each other, and...
You and Shannon.
Yes. And he opens his hood and looks under the hood. We look under the car for bombs. That's how paranoid we were. So, yeah, there was fear. Or at least knowing that it was a possibility. But yeah, there was a feeling of paranoia in the air, for sure. And so then we drove over and looked at Mark's car, and as I recall, I can't remember, this may be in my imagination, but it seems like there were still little wisps of smoke and steam, you know, I mean, it burned up and they put it out.
So this was the same
day. But it was a blackened hulk of a car. Same day, this was on the 16th.
Now, was this a pipe bomb or was it something else?
Pipe bomb.
It was
but
a
he
pipe
did,
bomb.
But it was not packed with shrapnel like the others were.
Oh.
So it was an explosive device without shrapnel. That's how he survived.
Oh.
So it
and
was
that's why the other two died.
So
they had
there's
shrapnel
speculation as to whether it was what it was meant to do.
I mean, I've heard that people think that it was an accident that he blew up himself.
I think it
was
an accident.
I've also heard that people thought that he did it to throw everybody off the case.
Right, you do.
What do you think?
It's possible that it was meant for Brent Ashworth. They used to meet together at the Crossroads Mall on, I think that was a Wednesday, if I remember right. I'm not positive on that, but they used to meet. And so there is speculation that he could have gotten Brent out of the way, who had become a real irritant and had just been fed up with Mark's shenanigans. They had lots of conflicts, and it wasn't like he suspected forgery or anything. But there have been so many botched deals and things that didn't come through the way where they're supposed to, and Mark could be difficult to deal with financially, especially. He would bounce checks and he did that to me a couple of times. But he would, he'd always make good, and he just put up with certain things. He had some idiosyncrasies that were a little strange.
It seems strange that he would bounce checks when he's making $40,000 on a document or whatever.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
but he did
he have
it a
another job
times.
Besides this document?
No, that became his full-time job. But anyway, let me just get back to your earlier thing about the fear and so on. So shortly after, that night, I talked to the police and someone suggested that I have the, we lived in the county, and someone suggested that we have county sheriffs go out to my house and look for bombs. And so I sent my family to my mother-in-law's place so that our house would be vacant. And so I was there with two sheriff's deputies, and we were going through my house room by room, in the garage, in the yard. And there was actually kind of a lighter moment when I'm leading the way, pushing doors open
gingerly.
There was something in black plastic by my front door that I didn't remember what it was, and we're all looking at it like, what's that? And I'm thinking, I don't know. And it was big and wrapped in black plastic. So I called my wife, and she reminded me that a neighbor had brought it over for me to look at. So it was some old thing they wanted. So anyway, I'm pushing doors open, and we're walking through and shining lights, and these guys are ready for action. And I remember saying, hey, I don't get paid to do this. You do this. So I made one of them get in front of me and going through room to room. Yeah, exactly. And so, that was genuine. I guess you could say that was genuine fear, at least the possibilities of what could happen. Particularly, I was worried about my family.
Especially in light of Kathy Sheets.
Exactly.
She was an unintended victim.
Exactly. Although we didn't know why she died at the time. I don't know, this is kind of an aside here, but another...
We're into gospel tangents, we can go off.
Okay, tangents, good. Brent Ashworth and his wife left their home to get away because they knew that he was a possible target. With all this wondering about who the targets really were, and if it was something to do with Mormon documents, then he could be a possible victim, target. So they left, and they left their family with, I don't remember with whom, but his son, who was out riding his bike on a Sunday when they were gone, when they were in basically in hiding, I guess. And he was hit by a car or a truck, and
it
was his son,
oh, his son
was. His young son, and was in a coma for a long time and passed away. And so for Brent, those things are intertwined, so Mark and the death of his son, and not to mention all the other damage that he had done financially, emotionally. And yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that in Brent Ashworth's life, the Mark and all the things that he did, the damage that he caused, also included the death of his son, because that wouldn't have happened had Brent and his wife been home and been supervising the kids, and he wouldn't have been out riding his bike, and that accident wouldn't have occurred. But you were asking about other things that happened that kind of showed the fear that was present. I remember coming home one day, and there was a box in my mailbox on my, on the side of my house there, and I didn't want to touch it. This was shortly after the bombings, and so I actually had to go down and track down the mailman see if he had just delivered that, and he had, and just turned out to be some books that I'd ordered or something. But, you know, the thought occurred to me, could be a bomb.
There was no return address on there or anything?
Yeah, I couldn't see it close enough because I didn't want to touch it.
Uh-huh.
So I could just see this box.
Now, as I recall, there was a package delivered to the Sheets family, and that it was Kathy that picked it up, and that's when
right.
it blew up.
That's right.
And so did you know that when that came, when you saw this package you didn't recognize?
The same thing occurred to me that it could happen. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was a possibility. But I knew that if the mailman had been throwing it around in his truck, that it was pretty safe. But the really tragic and the cold-blooded aspect of, especially of Kathy's death that day, was that later Mark said that it wouldn't have mattered whether she had picked it up or somebody else had picked it up or nobody picked it up, but they saw Gary Sheets' name on it and then they knew it was a bomb. I mean, the fact that it killed somebody wasn't even necessarily a factor, or it could have been a neighborhood child, or he just wanted to send a message. So that's how cold that was. And then obviously the murder of Steve Christensen was extremely cold-blooded, and had Mark not been in the financial straits that he was in and had all this pressure on him, I don't think he would have killed anybody. But the fact that he could do it so easily, get away with it, and you know, in that day that he talked to me, the first day, when he's actually sort of making jokes right after he'd killed somebody, that's frightening.
That's terrible.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Kurt Bench. In our next discussion, Kurt tells us that the police immediately suspected Mark Hoffman was the bomber. However, it took some convincing for Kurt to finally come around to that position.
Yeah, they were convinced, but it took a long time to convince me and others that he was guilty. He was our friend. He was a guy we'd known and done business with for years, and your friends don't kill people, you know, and there was no talk then of forgery or you know, nobody knew about the financial schemes or, you know, him being a con man or anything like that. So that was all to come. So
so you were disbelieving the police for a period of time?
Yeah, until finally it became overwhelming.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.